Eliminating the Gender Pay Gap. A closer look at today's Equal Pay Day here on the First Coast and around the world. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, today, April 10th, is Equal Pay Day. It's the day set aside each year to show how far into the year women have to work to earn what their male counterparts earned in just 12 months last year. What do you think about this? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, promoting mental health awareness. We'll tell you about the upcoming Mosaic 2018 event here in town. And it's our book club today on the show. Our leader, Stacey Goldring, goes inside the novel An Unnecessary Woman. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, today is Equal Pay Day. It's the day women's wages finally catch up to what men earned in 2017. This day for years now has been a symbolic marker to illustrate that women have to work on average more than 15 months to make what most men earn in 12 months. According to the Institute for Women's Policy Research, women only earn 80 cents to the dollar earned by men for the same skills and jobs. There's greater disparity among Latino and African-American women, too. And if we stay on this current course, the gap, the gender pay gap, it won't close for over 100 years. So what do we do about this? What's causing the gender pay gap? What's happening here in Florida to address it? Right now, we're pleased to welcome Paula Liang, Ellen Wiss, and Melanie Patz, all members of the Women's Giving Alliance here on the First Coast. They join us now on this Equal Pay Day. Ladies, always great to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And what are your thoughts and comments and questions about Equal Pay Day? If you're a man, what do you think about this? The women you work with are, chances are, earning less than you for often the very same job. If you're a woman, we want to hear about your experiences trying to get paid what you're worth in the workplace. Call us up right now at 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page as well. All right, let's begin with you, Ellen Wiss. As I mentioned, women are still making about 80 cents to the dollar for what men make. That has barely inched up over a period of many years. So today's the day set aside to look at the gender pay gap around the world. In a moment, we'll talk about all the research that you bring to the table. But first, when you look at this issue locally, what are you seeing and what are you hearing from women when they talk about equal pay?
They want equal pay.
Exactly.
And I'd like to answer a question that you asked in the beginning. You asked for men to weigh in, and men should appreciate that more women involved at the top make the dollars happen at the at the bottom line. So research by a Fortune 500 company show that women at the top return more of equity by 46%, a return on investment higher of 60%, and a return on sales is 84% higher. So we want women in equal positions.
Okay, let's talk about the research, Melanie Patz. You have some interesting information to share about the gender pay gap, both locally and around Florida, and Paula Liang as well. What are you learning?
Well, we released research yesterday from the Institute for Women's Policy Research that about earnings and employment that shows county by county exactly what the gender pay gap is. The overall grade for Florida versus 10 years ago has gone down. 10 years ago, we got a C minus. Today, we are a D plus. Overall,
a D plus.
A D plus.
We're at the risk of flunking here.
Yeah, no kidding. we were kind of happy with
we're
the
on
C
minus. Secret academic probation.
I know. In inflation adjusted dollars, women in 2002 were making an average of about $37,000 a year, and that's gone down to $35,000. Our gender gap actually looks pretty good, but that's only because men lost 14% of their annual earnings over that period.
Men are sliding back too.
Yeah. And that's not how we would have chosen to close the gap if we had to do it. It's because we have so many people overall in the state in minimum wage jobs.
Right. And we're getting comments about that, Melanie Petz, on our First Coast Connect Facebook page, saying, in effect, you can't really look at this objectively in Florida when we're a service and tourism-driven economy and a lot of these jobs are low-wage jobs. You've done research on this too, haven't you?
That's right. That's right. Yes, so we are a service economy. And the good news is in January, we did raise the minimum wage in the state of Florida to $8.25 per hour. The problem with that is if a person works full-time, year-round, 40 hours a week at minimum wage, they're only making slightly over the federal poverty level. And so that certainly isn't enough for a family to live off, definitely a family that is more than a single adult. So let me just state that again. If you work full-time in Florida, you make $17,000 an hour at minimum wage.
$17,000 a year.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, if you're earning minimum, you can't live on that.
You cannot. Well, so United Way did a study last year that calculated what does it actually cost to survive in Duval County with just basic living expenses. And what they calculated for a single person is $19,000. Mm-hmm. And so if you're making minimum wage, working full-time year-round, earning $17,000, you're $2,000 in the hole.
We'll go to your calls in a moment about the gender pay gap. Today is Equal Pay Day. It's 549-2937 to join us as we speak with Women's Giving Alliance members Paula Lee Yang, Melanie Petz, and Ellen Wiss. Paula co-chairs the Florida Women's Funding Alliance. Melanie Petz is vice president at Baptist Health. Ellen Wiss, your WGA president here in Jacksonville. The Women's Giving Alliance, of course, is focused right now on breaking the cycle of female poverty in Florida. And the gender pay gap, as your research shows, is a big factor that keeps a lot of working women in poverty. Your research shows that the more women that are lifted out of poverty, the more society overall benefits, including men. It really benefits everyone.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And our research shows that of the working women facing poverty, the gender pay gap alone would lift 60% of them out of poverty if they were paid the same for the same jobs.
And think about the effect that has on their children.
Yeah.
Right. It helps their sons and their daughters.
Absolutely.
You know, and whenever we talk about the gender pay gap, people always point to a number of reasons driving it. Men in particular, and we're getting a lot of comments from men on our Facebook page, they will say, here's a comment from one guy, Matt, teasing out a subgroup is a transparent ploy only manipulative journalists fall for. With primarily low-wage tourism and retail jobs dominating the market, Florida is dragging the bottom in a whole host of metrics your guests conveniently ignore. And here's one from Marcellus. When talking about equal pay, it should come down to the ability to do the job point blank. Okay, so as yet, we're only getting comments from men on our Facebook page about this. And, you know, when you talk about this with men, often you see a lot of defensiveness.
Sure.
Let's talk about what the data sets show, not just in Florida, but around the world. What's driving this?
If you correct for age, education level, training type, job type, work the same number of hours, rural, urban status, it's still, the numbers still hold. It's not about women's choices. It's not about their ability to do the work. It's about what they get paid.
Gender bias.
The reason we know
this, saying gender bias in the workplace.
Yes. The reason we know this is because childless women make about 98% of what men make. It's when they have children that the bias really kicks in.
So when a woman has a child, she pays an economic penalty in the workplace.
Absolutely.
And that's attributable to a lot of factors. Sometimes, like say you're a woman at a law firm and you have kids, you may make less because you don't want to work 90 hours a week to make partner.
Whether or not you do, there's a perception that you won't.
Or there's a perception that you won't.
Yes.
So there are lots of subtle ways this works.
Exactly. And there are lots of systemic ways it works. For example, there was a decision out of the Ninth Circuit yesterday. That's exactly on point. A school district tried to justify the fact that third grade teachers with the same number of years in service side by side classrooms were paid thousands of dollars differently because one teacher came into the system having been paid less in her last job, and they based her salary on that rather than the number of years she had been paid to do the same job. And they said, well, that's gender neutral. And the Ninth Circuit unanimously said, no, that just systematizes the discrimination.
Well, and how many of us have been in boardrooms where they've been talking about an important project and their question has been, well, we can't give it to her because she has kids and so she won't be able to do it.
Nobody says that about the dads.
No one says that about the dads.
Right. Okay, let's go to your calls now. As we mark today, April 10th is Equal Pay Day. It's a way to show on the calendar how many more months women have to work to earn the same amount that their male counterparts earned in just 12 months the year before. What are your thoughts, comments, questions? 549-2937. Mark is in Mandarin. Hey, Mark, good morning.
Hi. My wife has had many jobs over the decades, and in which equal pay for the same job title would either have resulted in her pay being reduced or her being terminated because her pay was too high.
Really?
They can't pay everybody what they're paying the person who they value the most.
Wow. And how does your wife feel about that?
Well, she actually, one company she worked for was bought out by another company, and they terminated her and a lot of other people whose pay was too high for the job title, according to the company that bought them out, and they didn't even check with the managers. Her manager said she was sick to her stomach when she found out that my wife was let go, and because her pay was just too high for that job title. But the company that she had been working for, you know, paid her that because they felt that she deserved it and was worth it.
Man, I'm sorry to hear that.
And a lot of jobs. I mean, if you have a manufacturing job with people working in an assembly line and everybody's doing the same thing, then you could say, okay, these people should be earning the same pay for the same job title. But a lot of companies, a lot of jobs aren't like that.
The
value of a person to the team, you ask the coworkers, you ask people in other departments that they're working with, yes, the managers, they will say, well, this person, they had a thing for many years where they would have reductions in force and they would let the managers choose which person to let go.
Right. And you're right. So many subtle factors can play into all of these dynamics in all these different workplaces, Mark. And so I really appreciate you calling and sharing that with us. Thanks, Mark. That's Mark down in Mandarin. Your thoughts, ladies?
Melissa, I just wanted to say that we've been talking so far about the gender disparity, the wage gap at the higher levels. This has a huge impact on poverty in our community at the lower levels. So we have 47% in Duval County of households that are headed by women are living in poverty. That is directly related to the wage gap. And another 29% don't have enough to cover the basic needs that they need for their families. And so often we think people are poor because they don't work. That is not true. They are working. In fact, 50% of income for people who are poor is wages. And so this disparity between what males and females make in the workplace has a huge impact at the lower level.
Thanks for pointing that out. Lots of calls on Equal Pay Day. Omar on the South Side. Hello, Omar.
Hello, good morning. I just have a comment. You did bring up, one example was an attorney with women in the job place, basically being penalized because they do have children. I feel like this is more so one of those situations where you need to bridge the gap between genders and allow the fathers to take up some of that slack. I know whenever the workforce kind of died down in 2008, I took responsibility of our son. It was very difficult getting back in the job force. My wife was an attorney. But more so whenever it comes to women in the workplace making or having equal pay, if we kind of work on the other side of things too and allowing fathers to go ahead and take up some of the slack at home and kind of help out and not be penalized for being fathers at the same time that are still working full-time jobs, allowing the mothers and fathers or domestic partnerships to kind of have the equal amount of either maternity leave or whatever examples you want to bring up in the conversation, giving every side of the family, everyone across the table, the same ability to raise that family and no one get penalized, because it's going to be one or the other unless somebody kind of like stops talking about gender differences and start talking about the family needing to be one whole. You know, I totally agree that women are not treated fairly whenever it comes to not just earnings, but a lot of different things across the board, and we do need to fix that. Mm-hmm. But as far as a family is concerned, and specifically you talking about whenever a woman does have a child, she is penalized. Agreeing with you, I'm saying in order for her to have the equality, there needs to be equality across the board for the man to come in or the domestic partner to come in and take up that slack to help as well.
Thanks, yeah, Omar. Thank you for that. That's an important point. Paula Liang.
So I totally agree, Omar. You're the bomb. and one of the things that would help a lot is paid family medical leave. We're one of three or four countries in the world that does not have
in the industrialized world, right? Yeah,
anywhere. The others are Swaziland, Lesotho, and Papua New Guinea, who do not have any kind of paid family medical leave. And even, you know, most of the bigger corporations have finally come around to recognizing that both men and women need some time off after the birth of a child to do some parenting.
Now, if you're a guy who works for a company that has, you know, a more equitable leave policy like that, do you find that more men are taking advantage of that, or do they still feel a stigma? Do they still feel afraid to take, say, 12 weeks off to care for a new baby in the house because they worry they might fall back at work if they do that? You know, I mean, because I think this point is important.
Well, we heard Omar say that. Until
men embrace this fully in the workplace, we're stuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's still a bias. There's a gender bias that affects women, but there's also this bias that men should work all the time, not ever take a day off, be the breadwinner. And if a man takes a long family leave, I think a lot of men are still worried about doing that. They don't feel like they can do that in the same way.
I don't know of any data on that, research on that, but I do think it'd be interesting to have some of our listeners call in and tell us, have they taken time off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to hear from more men out there and women. So far, all the callers are men on this Equal Pay Day.
So interesting.
Harmon is at JIA. Hi, Harmon. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Ross.
Oh, you keep promoting me. And I didn't even pay for graduate school.
Hey, with these kinds of shows, it shows why you are a doctor of communications.
Oh, you are so nice. Thank you for that. So what are your thoughts?
I was with the ladies, and I'm wondering how far did they drill down, and the reason being I'm consistently hearing men. Well, I guess I am African-American, black man, a colored man, you choose, I'm comfortable, whichever you choose. But however, in the research that I've seen, and I just quit looking at the research years ago, and it said for everybody doing the same job, the white man made $1, the white female made about 77 cents, the black female made somewhere between 67 and 70 cents. And me, as a black African-American man, I only made 57 to 60 cents, so I was on the bottom of the totem pole. So I'm kind of wondering, did the research show any kind of numbers like that? And if so, what can I do as an African-American man to catch up with everybody?
Okay, thanks, Harmon. Yeah, thank you for all of that.
Well, the data set that we produced is only about women. I'm sorry, Harmon, but it certainly does, when you dig into it, and it's available on the Women's Giving Alliance website, it does show data for Hispanic, the intersection of gender and mm-hmm. ethnicity and race. And for, if you want to compare a black woman to a similarly situated white man, her equal pay day is August 7th.
Yeah. And he is an African-American man, is pointing out, too, that he's not getting paid the same.
And that's absolutely true. And there's plenty of research out there about that. We just didn't happen to do that because our mandate is women and girls in Northeast Florida.
Casey in Mandarin. Hello, Casey.
It does show, man.
Hello, hey, Casey.
Hey, I was just calling to say I just had a baby in November, and I did take my maternity leave. The company that I work for is a rather large cell phone retail company, and they gave me, I think it was like 60% pay for maternity leave. I had 7 weeks full paid, and then 60% after that. So it was a pretty, pretty good pay as far as maternity leave. My husband works for a small business. It's actually a family business, and they gave him time off as well.
Oh, that's good.
My problem is now that the baby's getting older and we have doctor's appointments and things like that, it seems like it always falls on the mom to make those appointments and to, get the kids to the dentist and things like that. In addition to that, my large retail company, as far as PTO goes, I have a pretty generous amount of paid time off of PTO, but I'm required to use my paid time off to take them to appointments. So I get 2 regular days off a week, but in addition to those 2 regular days, I'm required to actually use my paid time off to make appointments, whether it's for my kids, myself, anything that I have to do. I have to take those 2 regular days off, but then I'm required to use paid time off as well. And it's like everything falls on me because I'm the mom, but at the same time, it's like, well, you have to use your paid time off, so forget about a vacation.
Sure. And millions of women are in the same boat as you, Casey. I've experienced this myself, and I so appreciate you calling with that those insights.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Melanie Patz. And yes, and congrats on the new arrival, Melanie Patz.
So Casey brings up a really great point, and that's benefits that come with jobs. And so many jobs are very, very important for healthcare, for retirement, as well as Casey mentions, paid time off, sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
And 70% of low-wage workers don't even have one paid sick day, not one. That is across the country. That is male and female. And so we need to be talking about not just equal pay, but also how do we make sure that the jobs that we do have pay, help our people.
And how do we, really what I hear all of you saying is, in addition to this issue of equal pay, the workplace needs to catch up to the modern day reality families are facing.
Exactly.
Parents have to take care of their kids. Mm-hmm. They occasionally have to go take their kid to the doctor or the soccer game or whatever. Men need that flexibility just as much as women. The workplace is still stuck. A lot of companies are still stuck in this almost 1950s mindset in the 21st century world where families are just trying to piece together a life for their family any way they can and work around all of these onerous old style policies in many cases.
Yeah, they're stuck in the Mad Men mold.
Not every company, but quite a few. I mean, and let me just, this is not a suck up at all. It really isn't. One of the things I like about my job here at WJCT is the flexibility is just a given. If you have to go take care of something with your family, nobody is going to give you a hard time about that. All right, let's go to Marlena on the South Side. Marlena, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you, or ladies, I should say. How are you guys doing?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
So I work for a very large financial firm here in Jacksonville on the South Side. You can't name any names, but we have a very amazing maternity paternity leave policy. It's a full 4 months. In fact, the ability to split your maternity leave, paternity leave up has been used. And I'm a financial advisor, so I work with a lot of men. In fact, it's a very male-dominated field. Even though Bank of America, I will say that, they do have a 49% female workforce, so that's really cool. Mm-hmm. But we, our guys are really taking an active participant role in, being parents, like more so than I've ever seen any other company I've worked for. They'll split their time off. They'll take 2 months right when the baby's born to be with the mom to help
get
the house you know, together. And then they'll come back to work, and then they'll go and take another 2 months. So that way they're not sitting and having to put their infant in, you know, daycare right away. So mom can go back to work and dad picks up the slack. So I really like seeing that, you know, just my boss and a bunch of the other guys, a lot of the men in leadership, in fact, it's like baby season. They're all going out because they're coming after the hurricane.
So that's so encouraging. Really that's so encouraging to hear that story, Marlena.
And yeah, kudos, thanks, Marlena.
And thank you so much. So yeah, so change is coming around at some companies. It's
and
not all bad.
She happens to be in an industry where the gender pay gap is even greater because it's a male dominated, as she said, a male dominated industry. So women are making 70 cents on the dollar for compared to men in that industry.
Right. So. But it's nice to hear that yeah. You know, that workplaces are kind of
very
evolving that way. Carrie in San Marco. Carrie, good morning.
Yes, I just wanted to say that women, I learned recently that women purchase 84% of all consumer goods in this country, and we're 54% or something of the population itself. If we simply just boycotted companies that didn't see women on their boards and simply started to look at the profiles of every product we buy, we could turn that around tomorrow. I mean, okay, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it wouldn't be hard to use the power of the purse to straighten a lot of this out, and not to mention unionizing at the lowest levels of the labor force, because they're never going to hand those folks anything unless they demand it. But other than that, that's all I had to say.
Thanks, Carrie. Let's take a few more calls. Alex at the Avenue. Alex, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to chime in and dial back. You guys mentioned the 19,000 peak that we need in pay to live in Duval County. Well, one would say, okay, well, let's just go to college. But most of us work full-time, 8 to 4. And I've done a fair share amount of research, and it seems that there seriously lacks evening programs for full-time workers. Not everyone can be a server at night and pay their big boy bills. So it's just, sure. I really wish there was more access to college for evening classes.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. That's a great point well. FSCJ is trying to work on that. A lot of community colleges are offering virtually free college in many ways, but you raise a very important point. Bonnie in Jacksonville Beach. Go ahead, Bonnie. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for letting me ask the question. I want to dig a little bit deeper into the stats that were provided. About 47% of the single mother households live at or below poverty. The comment was made that 50% of their income comes from a working wage. I'm curious, where does the other 50% come from? Is there stats on how many receive government assistance from taxpayer dollars? And what do you see legislatively being done? I know that the government employment laws are dictated by the size of the business, and that's to prevent excessive requirement from businesses, small businesses.
Sure. Thanks, Bonnie.
Okay.
Melanie.
Bonnie, thanks for the great question. Yeah, so 50% of income for people who are living in poverty comes from earned income. That's wages. The rest of it includes things like food stamps, which is a governmental program that you mentioned to help families purchase food. Child welfare, child support is another portion of it. And then just in general, governmental cash support.
Okay. And with all of that said, let's close by mentioning that the Women's Giving Alliance is holding an event here at WJCT Studios that I'm honored to moderate during the lunch hour today on Women in Leadership, How Women in Leadership Grows the Economy. Not too late for people to come on out to this?
That's right. Come on out. Bring your lunch. 11:30 at WJCT Studio A.
Bring your own lunch. Come on out. Be part of this event. And thanks so much, Melanie Patz, Ellen Wiss, and Paula Liang, three outstanding female leaders in this community. Thanks for joining us on this Equal Pay Day. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having us.
Much more still ahead later. Our book club blogger Stacey Goldring takes a look at the novel An Unnecessary Woman and Movable Feast in a moment. Much more coming. Keep listening.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Distracted driving is deadly, and it's not just teen drivers. Adults do it too, and there are millions more adults than teens. Arrive alive. Stop distracted driving. More at waynehogan.law.
Community hospice and palliative care. Are you a caregiver? You're not alone. A day of info and inspiration open to the public at Caregiver Expo with special guest Donovan Darius, Saturday, April 14th from 9 to 3 at Everbank Field. Register at mycaregiverconnection.org.
There are many reasons to give to WJCT, but the most important is that you value the programming on the station and want to help sustain it. Hi, I'm Kevin Mershart, and our spring pledge drive begins on Saturday. You can get a head start by becoming a sustainer today at WJCT.org or by calling 1-800-722-9528. And thank you for your support.
More than 500,000 Jewish Americans fought for their country during World War II. Get a sneak peek at the remarkable and little-known story of how these brave servicemen and women struggled against fascism as WJCT, in partnership with the Jacksonville Jewish Center, hosts a preview of segments from the new documentary, G.I. Jews, Jewish Americans in World War II, and a panel discussion with local veterans, Tuesday, April 10th at 7 p.m. To RSVP for this free event and complete details, log on to wjct.org/events. Sponsored in part by River Garden Senior Services.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Well, the percentage of women entering the franchising sector is increasing. The International Franchise Association says women now own more than 20% of all franchise businesses, including here in town. In today's Movable Feast, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with one of them. She's Dee Sims of the two franchises in this area called Your Pie.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
I would love to share your story about, firstly, how you chose Your Pie to be your business and the whole, I guess, the mechanism of running a franchise company and having two in different locations in our sprawling city of Jacksonville.
Well, to be perfectly honest, it was kind of an accident. My husband and I had worked together for a long time and had a previous business, and we had sold it. My husband was very disruptive in taking our kids out of school to go fishing, which, for the record, is not an excused absence. And so he actually found the franchise, decided that he wanted to jump from the corporate world into pizza concept, and he chose Your Pie. It's based out of Athens, Georgia, and I was just going to be the marketing girl, and about a year into it, he rolled over one morning and said, "Sweetheart, this headhunter's been calling me. I think I should really take this call." And I said, "Hold on a second."
So he left you holding the pizza oven in your hands, really.
Well,
or the pizza dough.
Well, I have to tell you, I was impressed with this brand. It's incredibly authentic in terms of food. And for me, as a mom and a parent, the challenge is always to feed your young children. At the time, my sons were both in their teen and early teen years. And the opportunity to quickly feed them food that we know has no preservatives and that they like to eat, and that, again, is very fast, was really important to us. So
I think one of the things that really impressed me about Your Pie when I came in the first time was the genuine caring about your patrons by your staff. They exuded a real concern when myself, as a patron, came up and saw all the ingredients, and it's very interactive. You have an opportunity to choose all of your ingredients, and then they customize your pizza just for you. But they took time to do that. So I'm sure that the training process for you owning two restaurants is in depth.
Absolutely. And it's ongoing. We serve a lot of guests with gluten allergies, with dairy. I never knew there were so many food allergies out there, and cross-contamination or lack thereof is extremely important to us. So whenever you're met at the dose station, our team member will actually ask, you know, is this a highly allergic? Is this food preference? I mean, we are able to customize each and every entree that is created right in front of it. We hand toss their pizza dough. Your options are wheat or white. And then, of course, we have gluten-free, which we typically prepare in the back, especially if you're highly allergic. And then we literally build the pizza right in front of you.
Now, do you see the transformation into more women becoming restaurant franchisees? You know, is there a spurt growth in this part of the culinary world?
That's a really good question. I was not a franchisee in my first business in my early 30s, and I always assumed, oh, franchisees, what are they've got it easy. And whenever we took this adventure on, I was really surprised. I mean, you are building a business, and I personally believe that if you build community, commerce will follow. If you are good to your employees, get involved in the community, that the world is round. It comes back to you. And regardless of what's happening on Wall Street or anywhere else on the planet, the fact is that local business makes a difference.
Well, I am delighted that you took time today to tell us about your pie. I don't know what's in your future, but I know what's in mine. I am going to have one. I'm going to try to squeeze on 40 toppings.
It's a lot, but I think we can do it for you.
Thank you, Dee Sims, your pie. I'm so delighted that you joined me on Movable Feast today.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Everybody eats when they come to mine.
That sounds like some good pie. Well, right now we want to talk about the latest acclaimed novel from Lebanese-American writer Rabih Alameddine. An Unnecessary Woman is a portrait of an isolated woman with a dazzling mind as she comes to grips with getting old. The narrator, Aliyah, lives alone in Beirut in the apartment she used to share with her husband before they divorced. She stays at home and her life is mostly about books. An Unnecessary Woman is Stacey Goldring's pick on the book club today. It's appropriate on this Equal Pay Day. By the way, every guest and contributor on the show today is a woman. Stacey Goldring, always good to see you. Good morning.
Good to see you too. Good morning, Melissa. Isn't this a perfect day to read books? Like if you could just stay home in your jammies with the rain coming down. I love these types of days.
Yes, it is. And this character, Aliyah, that's mostly what she does.
She is I like to be very neutral. I like to be Switzerland when I talk with my book groups about our titles, and we have our wonderful discussions. But speaking to the audience today, I cannot tell a lie. This woman is my role model, okay? This is a book where you're either going to love it or hate it because it's going to provide you with a lifetime of titles, or it's going to make you feel like you're not so bright because there's so much, there's a lot of name dropping. The problem with this book that people have it is because it is infused with so many wonderful quotes. Quotes such as the description of her husband, a listless mosquito with a malfunctioning proboscis.
That's pretty awful.
Yeah.
But
it's those types of smart quips that just really drew me to this main character, who is a woman who wants to be left alone with her books. And she's 72 years old. She knows who she is. She knows what she wants. Think Ron from Parks and Rec. Okay, this is a woman who knows what she wants, and I admire that. But people can look at that and say, someone who does not want to contribute to society, someone who does not want to engage. This is
almost
a hermit. Yeah, this is an unhappy person. This is an unnecessary person. So we get to the title of this book as unnecessary.
And in addition to reading the books, once a year she translates one of her favorite books by herself. Mm-hmm. Into Arabic.
She does this every year. She translates every year another book. She puts it away and no one ever sees it again. For me, that's awesome because I'd rather run a marathon with no one.
Why?
because I just want to do it. End of story.
Just but, so that you know you did
yeah,
it.
But for this woman, she translates, she puts it away. She has a ritual. Every year she starts on the first. She decides what the title's going to be. It is almost a sacred act. But for some people, they see that as selfish. You know, why aren't you giving the translations for other people to read? Mm. But the theme is about the process, enjoying the process, embracing the process. And that's who Aliyah is. And Aliyah is a Hebrew word and an Arabic word meaning sublime, rising above, ascending. So this woman, she has it going on, even if by accident she dyes her hair blue after two cups of red wine. Okay, so she's also human.
This is also a book about a city, Beirut, Lebanon.
It is. This is a story. Here's how Beirut is described in the book. Beirut is the Elizabeth Taylor of cities. Insane, beautiful, falling apart, aging, and forever drama-laden. She'll also marry any infatuated suitor who promises to make her life more comfortable, no matter how inappropriate he is. Huh. So Beirut is a city that, in a way, is almost unnecessary. If you think of the war-torn, horrible, sad history of what was once a beautiful city, you know, it was the Paris of the Middle East.
Sure.
And it's been discarded through different wars. So in a way, the metaphor of unnecessary applies also to this city.
Wow. So you chose this book for all of the layers and themes, I guess, that are within it.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost a book where nothing, it's like Dalloway and Beirut. Nothing happens, but everything happens. In Dalloway, what does Clarissa do? She runs errands for a party. But really, the whole world happens in running those errands. And in this book, we have a woman who has to leave the house because someone's going to knock on her door and she wants to ignore the knock. I've been there. And so she has to leave the house and she ends up going to a museum and visiting her mother. But in this case, the whole world happens in reflections. We have someone who eavesdrops on her neighbors. She loves to sleep with her AK-47 because you know what? She's living in a war zone.
In a war zone. Now, we're almost out of time, but let's quickly mention you, Stacey Goldring, will be appearing at the Jacksonville Public Library on Saturday at 1:00. And reviewing this book and some other titles, because, of course, the Public Library is our book club partner.
Mm-hmm. So I will be there, and we'll be discussing Little Fires Everywhere and also Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, all themes that reflect your show today, Melissa, of strong women.
I love it. I love it. Come on out and see Stacey Goldring Saturday, 1 p.m. at the downtown. It is the downtown Jacksonville Public Library.
Yeah, bring your lunch. Bring a friend.
Bring your friends. Bring anyone who loves books and reading. Come on out. Meet Stacey. She's such a rock star. And review these incredible books she picks every month on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. Always a pleasure.
We will be right back with a look at Mosaic 2018 happening this weekend at the Mosh. That's in just a moment.
Sponsored by San Marco Books and More.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. The Move Over Law protects police, fire, EMS, utility, and sanitation personnel and requires drivers to move over and slow down when approaching their vehicles. More at waynehogan.law.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Are you a caregiver? You're not alone. A day of info and inspiration open to the public at Caregiver Expo with special guest Donovan Darius, Saturday, April 14th from 9 to 3 at Everbank Field. Register at mycaregiverconnection.org.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Kilbride here at WJCT. You're able to listen to public radio because someone just like you gave a contribution. We'll start our spring pledge drive this Saturday. You value this programming, and now it's your turn to make a pledge. Go online to WJCT.org or call 1-800-722-9528 today to contribute. And we thank you.
On the next Fresh Air, the new film, The Rider, about a young rodeo rider in South Dakota. After a serious head injury, he's told to give up riding, rodeo, and training horses, the only life he knows. The film's star, Brady Jandrow, plays a slightly fictionalized version of himself. We'll talk with him and with the film's director. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Facebook has a lot of problems. Is being free one of them? The subscription-free platform makes billions selling your data. CEO Mark Zuckerberg will face a barrage of questions over the next 2 days from Washington lawmakers. If Congress and Zuckerberg cannot fix Facebook, can we do it for them? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, when you think of a mosaic, you imagine a piece of art made from many small pieces that together is greater than the sum of all the parts. An event called Mosaic 2018 is going to pull all of the pieces together this weekend when it comes to the issue of mental health awareness. Jeannie Hoff of Where's the Sunshine and Carmen Joyce of I Still Matter, two local mental health awareness groups, have organized Mosaic 2018, and they join us now with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good. So good to see you both as we continue our hour-long show with all female guests and contributors.
Woo-hoo! Wow, that's pretty
today
amazing.
On this equal pay day. Just kind of worked out that way, which is cool. Okay, so Mosaic is coming up Saturday night at the Mosh. Lots of food, drinks, entertainment, interactive art. And I'm pleased to be participating with Carrie Speckman in a Q&A about mental health. Tell us about this event.
So we had this idea that we do an event where we celebrate mental health and the arts together. A lot of mental health events are very heavy. They're education-based. They're deep, and they're not a lot of fun. And so a lot of people don't, you know, really like to attend or... You know, we wanted to do something light and celebrate what our city is doing in terms of mental health and what we're doing to help the city advance mental health causes and a treatment. And so we said, let's put something together that's fun, that celebrates the arts, because there's a lot of connection between the arts and mental health. And let's do something that's just enjoyable and that educates people, but at the same time, you know, everyone walks out feeling really good.
Sure. You'll also be launching the Studio Jacks. Mm-hmm. That's an arts center that will be encouraging entrepreneurship, recovery, support groups for artists and local creative people that are living with mental health challenges. That sounds interesting, too.
Yeah, I had that idea about a year ago, and I traveled down to Nine Muses Art Center in Lauderhill, Florida, and they've been running for about 20 years. It's an active studio. They teach fine arts. They also have supportive classes for people that are living with mental health challenges. They have it's a peer support model, so it's led by peers. So I want to bring that to Jacksonville.
This is also, it seems to me, that you're both working to reduce stigma for people that have mental health issues, so that more people feel comfortable talking about it, getting treatment, getting help. That's a big barrier still, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. I think, you know, one of the best ways that we can do that is to meet people and have conversations with people who are living with a diagnosis, and to realize that they're not crazy, they're not weird, they're not strange, just normal people that are struggling maybe in a different way than you are. And that's what we try to do. We also try to do that with art. I've done that with an installation that sort of traveled around the city called Inside Out, and it's going to be in the library from May through July in the Jacks Makerspace. So, yeah, we're doing a lot of that in the community.
Yeah, I think we want people to be out and about mental health. People will talk about it privately, but it's hard to get them out, you know, to to support it publicly. They kind of feel like they're guilty by association, that if they're with someone who has a mental health disorder, then that they're automatically, you know, associated. Well, oh, well, you hang out with someone with mental health and you have a mental illness. And so we want people to know that it's okay. And the best way to reduce stigma is to really have those one-on-one interactions with people who have a mental health diagnosis and to learn more about them and see just they're just like everybody else.
Exactly. So come on out Saturday night to the Museum of Science and History, the rooftop up on the Mosh roof. Hopefully no rain.
We have a backup plan just in case.
There's a backup plan, but it's going to be a fun party. Mosaic 2018. Yeah. I'm going to interview the fabulous mistress of mayhem and maven of mirth, Carrie Speckman, to get her story about this. Bob White is emceeing, music by Stacey Bennett from Focus People, food, drinks, 80s, interactive, an interactive mosaic, silent art auction, rooftop selfies at sunset. That sounds cool,
too. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, come on out Saturday night to Mosaic 2018 at the Mosh. Jeannie Hoff, Where's the Sunshine, Carmen Joyce, I Still Matter. Thanks for putting this together, and I'll see you there.
Thank you. Melissa.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A's up next as top Trump trade advisor Peter Navarro urges the president to impose tariffs on China. That's next. But if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m., just stay tuned for music. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then. Stay dry out there, and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.